SRNnews.com.
The WPCA radio weather update is next, made possible by Austed Super Value at Turtle Lake.
It's mostly cloudy and 39. Wind is from the south-southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Today, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Wind will be from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-40s. Wind will be from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 60s. Wind will be from the south-southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night with a low in the mid-40s. It's mostly cloudy and 39.
This WPCA radio weather update has been made possible by Austed's Super Value at Turtle Lake. Adam and Jody invite you to stop by soon.
The time is now 8:59.
Reminding you, inch by inch, anything's a cinch. This is WPCA LP 93.1 on your FM radio dial from Amory, Wisconsin.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. It is the first Friday of the month, and that means it's time for the Plant Rant with Sandra the Plant Lady. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning, everyone.
Boy, look at that sun out there, huh?
Another beautiful, great fall day. I mean, we have just had an amazing fall. And I know
sure.
I mentioned last month that I love the fall, and it just keeps going. It's been wonderful.
So how cool was it at your house this morning?
10 degrees warmer than yesterday. So it was it was like 38.
Yep, it was 37 at our house.
And, yeah, it was definitely, I think it was about 26 or 27 yesterday morning.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I felt, you could just feel the difference. It felt
balmy. Yeah, when you have 10 degrees, you can feel that. A degree or two I can't feel, but I can feel 10 for sure.
So it's been great. We've been out in the woods cutting pine, which gets used. It's pine tips and then some boughs, and it's, well, white pine mainly, and then some red pine, and then that gets sent to a wholesaler that then, like, makes the big pots and floral arrangements and things like that. So it has been, I mean, there's been some years we're out there cutting pine, and it's snow, and it's zero, and man, it's been...
You could almost work up a sweat in this kind of weather.
Yes, well, you do. And sometimes you do, even when it's that cold, depending upon if you're stacking, because the limbs get cut, and then you put them in a stack, and then you lift them and trim them. Yep. So it can get warm, depending upon what task that you're working on.
Oh, sure.
Boy, it's been just really lovely weather to be out and enjoying the woods and getting to see the deer. You know, the bucks have been pretty active lately, and so, you know, sometimes right in front of us they go running past, so it's been great. Well, I hope that folks have gotten out and checked out Silver Creek Herbals and maybe Silver Creek Springs, too. I know right after the show, or shortly, or right around that time, a few days after I had been out, so it would have been prior than it should have been to my announcing it, I know Tony had gotten out and done some maintenance on the trails there at Silver Creek Springs. So hopefully people got out and enjoyed. And that is open year-round, so even in the winter you can go snowshoeing.
Sure.
Just no motorized vehicles, which is kind of nice. So
it is. It stays that nice, quiet thing that the woods are known for.
Yes.
Yeah, because that motorized stuff, yeah, well. Anyway...
So, you know, it was interesting. I was looking back through my notes, and this seems unbelievable. It has been a whole year since I did the first Latin lesson. Doesn't seem like that much time has gone by.
A whole year, huh?
Mm-hmm. It was last November that I did the first Latin lesson.
Okay.
So I thought in honor of that anniversary, I would do a few little synopsis here on some of this. So these are going to be species names. So you have a genus and a species. And it was kind of interesting because I've been helping Anthony with English and things. And, you know, you talk about, like, comparative adjectives. And so I actually found this list, which all I could think of was, like, these are, like, comparative adjectives because you have minimus. Like, I have a plant called Stachys minimus, or it's actually Stachys minima, the one I have. But minimus or minima means smallest. And the Stachys minima that I have is like a miniature version of this Humelobetony, another, you know, a plant I also have that's a larger species or whatever. So species, or the Stachys minima is going to be the smallest, or if it says minimus. Then there's minor, like Vinca minor, which is a little ground cover plant, and that means smaller. So you have smallest and then smaller. And then you have minutus, which is very small. And then minutiflorus, which means with minute leaves or minute flowers. And then minutifolius, which is with minute leaves. And then you have minutissimus, which means the most minute.
Jeez.
But where this comes in handy, you know, there's been a trend. It's been going on for a while now, but people were really, really getting into these fairy gardens for a while. And so you're looking for these small plants. And so just by knowing the name, you're going to know what's the smallest, smaller, very small, the most minute, you know. So it's just, it's fun to use the Latin in that way. But yeah, I was kind of skimming through the book, thinking, well, what can we talk about? What species should we talk about? And then I came across that and just thought it was kind of fun. So
here's a question for you.
Oh no.
So okay, you get into these Latin terms and all that stuff, but when you go to a flower place or plant place or wherever, and you want to buy some of this stuff, and you're looking for it, and you say it in the Latin, do they know what you're talking about?
Well, I hope if you go to a reputable nursery, that they're going to know what you're talking about.
One
if
would
you go to a
so,
box
yeah.
store, they may or may not. It doesn't always mean they don't have well-trained people there.
Yeah.
If you go to a reputable nursery, an experienced nursery grower, they will know what you're talking about.
Okay. They probably even talk in those terms amongst themselves, or do they?
Yes. And the thing is, we're back again to the reason why we have these things. If you go in and you use a common name, there can be many, many plants that also go with that common name, whereas there's only going to be typically one plant with the Latin name.
Yeah.
Although they like to change things. You know, every now and then they'll combine. Now, Simisifuga is not Simisifuga anymore, it's Actaea, or vice versa. They like to do, you know, I think this happened with the chrysanthemums, our leucanthemum, which is also what daisies are. But then that's where the species name come in, because then you have your genus, which is very specific. And like I said, sometimes the taxonomist will change those things, and then they're kind of interchangeable for a while. And then you have your species name, which is going to be that specific plant, so that specific aster or that specific, you know, daisy, because there's so many different species with some of those things. But that's where knowing this Latin, that species name is going to describe that, you know.
Yeah.
The Vinca minor is going to have a small leaf versus the Vinca major, which is going to have a large leaf, even though they're both a Vinca. So
if I go to a reputable nursery or any store that is really into that sort of thing, are they going to have a little book that can tell me all these names that I can pick up?
They might. They might. I mean, some catalogs, you know, it varies. Some growers will organize their catalogs by scientific names. Some will do common names. Some will do both. So it just depends upon where you go. And some you might go to a place that doesn't have a plant list at all. Or, you know, I mean, that's what's so great. And that was one thing when I was in college. Like, we visited all these different growers and nurseries and greenhouses and seed farms and tree farms. And, I mean, there's so much variety out there in so many ways. I mean, you know, we went to one grower where they were still using a pencil to pop a hole and stick a seed in by hand.
Oh, my.
Then you go to a giant nursery like Bailey's where it's, you know, there's like huge machines that are doing all these operations. So it depends upon where you go. Everybody's got their own, unique style.
Yep.
Speaking of nurseries, I want to get to the community calendar here.
Okay.
And, oh, and you know what? I'm going to do one thing first because we keep forgetting to do this. You asked me a question. If anyone else wants to ask me a question, they can send me an email to plantrant93.1@gmail.com. So if anyone has a question, they can send me an email, and then I'll answer it on December's show.
All right.
So, community calendar. Well, now, slow down, Sandra. Abrahamson's has expanded their Winter Wonderland to include both the St. Croix Falls store and the Scandia location. So both locations will be open for, you know, seasonal decor, like I was talking about, snipping the tips. They would have all that stuff there to do your own decorating. They would also have pre-made containers if you would like to. Or, and they'll have, you know, the holiday trees and all that too.
Sure.
But if people are interested in, they are doing a winter container workshop.
Oh.
And so there'll be 8 sessions total. So they're going to do 4 at each store. So on Saturdays, November 13th, and then I wrote Sunday. Let me double check something here because that also be, I might have transferred some information down wrong.
Oh, you wouldn't make a mistake.
Yeah, so Saturday, I transferred my notes to try to be more organized. So much for that. So Saturdays, the November 13th and November 20th at 10 and 1, and that's at each location. So whatever's more convenient for people, St. Croix Falls, or if they'd rather zip through Osceola and head down to Scandia. And then you can call to reserve a spot at either 651-433-2431, that's the Scandia store, or 715-483-3040, and that's at, so 3040, and that's the St. Croix Falls. And then with both of those, you'll press 1. You'll pick option 1 on the phone, and then you'll be able to set up your reservation if you want to do any of those container workshops. And you can go and do a 12-inch container and get creative, and they'll have all the supplies there, the pot and the soil and all the stuff, and then all the accents so you can build your own container. And usually they have some munchies and beverages and things like that too.
So I'm sure.
Should be a fun time for folks and kind of getting in, even though this weather's been so good. We're almost a week into November already, and
that's right.
All the holidays will be just around the corner here. So
it comes up quicker than you think.
Well, it always does.
Yeah.
So it always does. And I am going to read a little excerpt here from The Gardener's Year. I love that, the Carol Capick book. So here we have a little bit on November, speaking of. Yet a little while, and we shall do our garden the last service. We will still allow 1 or 2 early frosts to come, and then we shall bed it in green brushwood. We shall bend the roses and scrape soil up to their necks. We shall spread resinous spruce branches over the beds, and then good night. Usually one covers up something else with this brushwood, a pocket knife or a pipe. In spring, when we take the brushwood away, we shall meet with everything again. But we are going too quickly. We have not stopped flowering yet. Still, the Michaelmas daisy blinks with its lilac eyes, the primroses and the violet flowers, as a sign that even November is spring. The Indian chrysanthemum, so-called because it is not from India but from China, does not let any atmospheric or political conditions prevent it, be they ever so bad, from producing all its fragile and immense profusion of flowers, of fox, reddish, and glistening white, golden, and garnet flowers. Still the rose bears its last bloom. Queen of plants, you have been flowering for 6 months. It is your royal duty. And then the leaves are flowering, the autumn leaves, yellow, purple, flaming red, orange, paprika scarlet, blood red, and red, orange, black, and dusty blooming berries, and yellow, reddish, and blonde wood of the naked branches. And still we have not finished. Even when they will be buried in snow, there will still be the dark green holly with glowing red berries and black pines and little cypresses and yews. There is never an end. I tell you, there is no death, not even sleep. We only pass from one season to another. We must be patient with life, for it is eternal.
Wow.
And I just thought it was beautiful. And, you know, we just had Samhain, or Halloween, as people commonly call it. And that's our, you know, in the solar year, we're moving now, like, into the new year. So we go into this dark period. So I just thought that was kind of interesting when it is actually talking about, you know, that there is no ending.
Yeah.
You know,
it's perpetual.
It's perpetual, yes. So I just thought that that was, yeah, there is no death, not even sleep. We pass from one season to another. So even though we're in that season, you know, where we're kind of honoring the dead with Halloween and Samhain and all that, but then yet we're, life is still there. But, yeah, and speaking of all these little tasks for going into this dormant time, I would say definitely get those tree guards on your trees now, especially I was talking about the bucks running around because they are rubbing on things and making their mark. So, and then the other reason you want that, which I know I talk about this every year, but it's so important, so it's my friendly reminder, but you also want to protect the thin bark trees like your maples and your apple trees from what's called frost crack or sun scald, where the sun shines down and the sap starts moving, and then the temperature changes, and then that expands, and you get these cracks. And if that keeps happening every year, then it starts to be a real problem for the tree.
Not
so in
good.
Addition to protecting from, you know, from rodents and from deer, really using that to protect from the sun as well. And you can get tree wrap or tree guard at, you know, the nursery or the hardware store will have it.
So how high are those tree wraps?
I mean, well, you usually go to the first set of branches. If you get the wrap, I mean, it's easy to move around. Otherwise, like, I use the plastic tubes just because I have them from year to year, and they're easy on the younger trees to just, you know, put those over. So that's kind of a matter of preference or what you have available.
Okay.
And usually to the first set of branches.
Okay.
And then there is still time to plant. It is really nice out. Or if you have some perennials, I have a few pots that I never did plant yet this year, and I just haven't felt motivated for whatever reason. So I'm thinking I'll just dig some holes and sink those pots.
Mm.
And then that way in the spring, I'll have some plants already to go because, you know, we're all in the spring all juicy and excited and ready to get out there and plant something. Well, then I'll have some pots ready to go when I'm feeling a little more motivated to do the planting.
Yeah, but you know what'll happen, Sandra. You'll have all of that, and you'll still run to the nurseries and do all that.
Well, heck yeah, I will.
I mean, no matter how prepared you are, you don't ever have quite enough.
Oh, no, there's always more. Yes. And I take all the freebies and the orphans.
Oh,
and, you
for
know,
sure.
Things people are moving to a new home. So, and then we need cooler temperatures still here before start doing extra mulching. The goal of mulching is to keep things evenly frozen for the winter, not warm.
Mm.
So right now it's too warm. We need some consistent cool nights. I was thinking about that. You know, normally, you know, when I was managing the nursery, this would be the time of year to start overwintering. And it's like, wow, with a fall like this, you can't cover until you have some consistent cool nights where things are actually starting to freeze solid. Because you want to keep them frozen, not keep them thawed out.
We've barely been tipped by much frost.
No, just a little bit. And even that's been kind of patchy.
Yeah.
You know, we've got squash and gourds and pumpkins still outside, and we've been covering those with blankets and that, but not even sure how necessary. You know, there's only been a few nights it's probably been necessary. Oh, and then we had the most amazing morning glory this year, so I kept putting a sheet over it, and it was kind of in a protected spot. Well, then we quit covering it thinking, you know, well, we're at the end. Well, I bet that thing would have kept going if I would have just kept it covered some more, because now now we're not going to get into the cooler, you know, freezing temperatures, I don't think, again, for several more days here.
Oh, yeah, so. It's going to be almost a week.
So I brought my house plants in too way early, which they probably would have been fine, but you don't know. It's good to just start getting ready. And then now that we've had some frost, that's the other thing for folks that do the tender bulbs that need to get lifted, you know, Canna and Glads and dahlias and those things. Normally you want like the foliage to get frozen and then you dig them out. So we're eventually going to be in crunch time here with
That's what one gets for waiting for the weather.
But you have to wait for the weather. Like, you can't mulch until it's frozen. You aren't supposed to dig things up until the bulbs to store them until they've had a hardening off. And so, so you're just kind of on hold, but you work with the weather and it's the way it is. I mean, I'm grateful it's been like this because to work outside every day in the woods, it's been very nice.
Yeah, I'd say.
It's way better than other years. Nice. Well, I have a topic today, and once I started researching this, I think that I've barely scratched the surface. So I'll just spend the end of the show here just touching base. Looks like we've got about 10 minutes.
Yep.
And I wanted to get all the other fun stuff out of the way, too, because otherwise we get going and run out of time at the end. So kind of change the order. Usually I do the Latin lesson at the end and my gardener's year at the end. But mixed it up today. Keep it interesting for folks.
Exactly.
So I want to talk about bees. And I know I had my guest Anthony on in the spring, and he talked about bees and why they're important for pollinating and talked about the life cycle. And I got to thinking just more about bees. Like, I got stung multiple times this summer, which I really have never gotten stung. I mean, even all the years at the orchard. But there were ground bees. So I started thinking about ground bees. And then I learned, like, ground bees is actually kind of, it's like a misnomer.
Oh.
Because they're not actual bees. So back up. How do I do this? So bees are in the order Hymenoptera, which is the third largest of all insect orders. So that's a lot. It includes ants, bees, sawflies, and other varieties of insects. So, and this whole group is really important because they're pollinators of wild and cultivated flowering plants. And some of them are also parasites, but they're parasites of destructive insects. So they're beneficial in that way that they're getting rid of other insects that would be causing damage. And then, of course, we get honey, from the actual bees. So I've been looking about this because of these ground bees, and they're actually... So, first of all, 70% of 20,000 species of bees nest underground.
Ooh.
So, those, and ground nesting native bees are not aggressive, and they are super important pollinators. So, I'm kind of feeling guilty that I've been telling people I've been bit by these ground bees, and everyone calls them ground bees, but those ground bees that get angry and come out and bite you... are actually a wasp.
Oh.
And, of course, wasps are related. They're in that order Hymenoptera, but they are a wasp and not a bee. So, and then what makes that order Hymenoptera is that signature narrow waist, which you can really see more easily on a wasp, but it's that narrow abdomen set off from the thorax. So it's got that real narrow.
Yeah.
You know,
so are they generally aggressive, wasps?
So wasps, the most common wasps are the paper and yellow jackets, and they are known to be aggressive, and they can either be social or solitary as far as how they live. That depends upon the species. And then, of course, we talk about hornets. A hornet is a type of wasp.
Oh.
Just like the paper wasp, the yellow jacket. And then the hornet, though, is a little more robust. They're larger, and they're social. They're not a solitary wasp. They're a social wasp, so that means they live in groups.
Oh.
And then the other thing about wasps, so, and wasps are predators, so they're actually good. I mean, aside, yes, we don't like them near our doorways and things like that, but they are a predator, so they, you know, can be considered a beneficial insect.
Sure.
The thing with the wasps is that they don't lose their stinger when they sting you, so they can sting you multiple times. So that's, I think, what happens, like with those ground, the wasps, the small ones that we call ground bees that are actually wasps, that's the thing with them. Like, it might only be one that's getting you, but it gets you
multiple times.
Whereas, like, a honeybee, they do have stingers, but they'll actually die after they sting you. So it's not in their best interest to sting you, you know.
And it's better for they hold their temper.
And most bees are not, you know, are not aggressive. But so the fact that the majority of bees live underground, so this is part of what separates the different types of bees. So as far as bees go, now we talked about wasps, but back to bees. So there's honeybees, there's carpenter bees, there's bumblebees, you know, some are solitary, some are ground nesting. So the honeybees typically live in hives and hollow trees, and they're hairy, and they eat nectar. And then the bumblebees also eat nectar, and they typically live in, like, cavities or abandoned, like, rodent burrows. And then there's the carpenter bees, and they nest in a wide variety of wood, so either partially decayed trees or an exposed structural timber or, like, unpainted wood. So even amongst the bees, there's different types and then different places where they live. And, of course, the bumblebees, you know, are a little bit bigger, a little bit hairier. And then it got me, so, you know, there's so many things that mimic bees as well. So you can see we'll probably have a whole other show about this. I'm just kind of doing a quick little overview here today. But there's flower flies, which people have seen often, and they look like little tiny bees. But they're mimickers, and what part of that is in their own safety, because they can't sting, but they mimic, and they mimic the sounds that the insects make, typically, like the bees and that. So it makes birds and other predators leave them alone.
Okay.
You know, and some of them, there's even a species called drone fly, because it looks so much like the honeybee. That it's called a drone, which is a male honeybee, is called a drone. So these drone flies are a type of flower fly that imitate, because even amongst the flower flies, there's different ones that imitate, like, the honeybee, or they, you know, they imitate even, like, one that looks more like a wasp, but it keeps them protected. And they're still really important pollinators. So these flower flies are super important. And then there's the one that's called the hoverfly. Like, a bee will normally just kind of slowly go from flower to flower. So if you see something hovering, then you know that's not a bee, it's a hoverfly, and they can't sting you. They don't have a stinger, and they're very important for the plants. And not only are they important as pollinators, but they also help control pests. So about 40% of the world's species of flower flies belong to groups with larvae that eat aphids, scales, and other soft-body pests. So aphids and scales are really common plant problems that people have. And here are these little flower flies, you know, their larvae eat those things. So that's where it's like I'm always preaching about not killing things or making sure you know what you're looking at, because you could be getting the thing that's eating the thing that was affecting your plant or whatever. So, and there's some great information. Well, the one on the flower flies I found was actually from the U.S. Forest Service, and that was a good one. And then there's this bee spotter, which is where I've got some identification, and they had a whole thing about bee mimics as well, and it was great because they had these three pictures, and it was like, look at these and identify which are bumblebees and which are honeybees. And it turns out, like, none of the pictures are bees, and, I mean, they fooled me. So, you know, and even amongst the bumblebees, there's a mimic, a specific mimic of that called this cuckoo bumblebee, which it's not a bumblebee, but it works like the cuckoo bird where it invades the nest. And like takes over. Anyway, we don't need to get into all that. But for identification, like you look at the antenna, the bee antenna are going to have like a, they have like a joint, kind of like our elbow. It's called an elbowed antenna, so it actually they bend. And then most insects have two pairs of wings, which includes all the bees. But many flies, which are disguised as bees, they only have one pair of wings. So you can look at wings. You can look at, you know, the fuzziness of the body. You can look at how these antennae are, the legs. And this is the difference between, so a bumblebee and a honeybee has on its back legs what's called a pollen basket. And you can really see it sometimes on the bumblebees, where they'll have this big yellow kind of buildup on the back of the leg.
Wow.
So that's...
You could go on forever with this.
Well, right, and that was the thing. As I was preparing for the show, I'm like, okay, first of all, there's so much information. And like I said, I'm only kind of scratching the surface, but I also felt like before I devoted a half an hour total to it that I really wanted to have my information straight, because I'm learning along with you all. I'm learning this as I'm teaching you. I'm learning myself. You know, I mean, I took an entomology course, you know, 2 decades ago or whatever, but it's just, I've been so curious because I, you know,
because there you are, there they are.
Look like bees that aren't, and I just, and then like, well, what is a bee? And then, you know, we always talk about saving the pollinators and saving the bees. Well, all these, even these insects that aren't bees are still pollinators and still have...
They all need to be saved.
...jobs to do. So I just thought it was really interesting. And now I need to quit calling the little ground wasps ground bees. Most bees are from the ground, and they're not necessarily mean, so...
So
and
we'll,
even those ones, they're just protecting their space. The only time I got stung was when I was working in an area where their nest was.
Well, that was not a good idea.
So they're like, hey, yeah, I quit weeding in that spot.
Well, we're out of time, Sandra.
Yes, I know we are. So
we'll get into this next time.
Perhaps.
Perhaps more about bees.
I have another idea for December, so we'll see when we get back to the bees. But and folks can do some of their own research, but that was just kind of a quick little overview, and
we'll look forward to next time.
I'll find a bee expert for spring or something. So
thanks
all right,
a lot,
have
Sandra.
A great month, everyone. Enjoy the beautiful weather.
Yep. Bye-bye
Bob.
Sandra the plant lady on the Plant Rant from WPCA.